I'm Brian Ellison, in for Steve Kraske, and this is Up to Date. When you think of a wedding, do you see a vision of a bride in white, a tuxedoed groom, a march down the aisle to music by Mendelssohn? Well, not everyone is joined in holy matrimony by that same stately ceremony, and various faith traditions handle the sacred vows in vastly different ways. On today's program, we request the honor of your presence at our Religion Roundtable, where we'll discuss Hindu, Jewish, and Christian wedding traditions, and your traditions too, along with the memorable moments that often ensue when the big day arrives. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Good morning and welcome to Up to Date. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Steve Kraske. So some people are religious, some aren't. Not everyone makes attending worship a priority, but there's one religious ceremony where sooner or later almost everyone has to show up, a wedding. We have a pretty firm picture in our mind of what a wedding looks like and what it's about, but how close does that picture in our mind match the real understanding of marriage that the world's various religions are trying to convey? And what do those who officiate these services really think about them? Today, the Up-to-Date Religion Roundtable returns, and the subject is weddings. Joining us this time, welcome back to Rabbi Scott White of Congregation Ohev Shalom in Prairie Village. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you, Brian. Nice to be here.
Scott's also the president now of the Greater Kansas City Rabbinical Association, so congratulations about that.
Thank you.
Father Thomas Wiederholt is a Catholic priest. He's retired as a pastor, although you can't ever retire as a priest, right? Welcome, Father Tom.
Thanks, Brian.
And Arwind Khetia is a member of the Hindu Temple and Cultural Center of Kansas City for the last 20 years or so, and he conducts wedding ceremonies himself. So welcome to you, Arwind.
Thank you, Brian. Good to be here.
Full disclosure for everyone, I'm actually a Presbyterian minister. I've done probably 50 weddings over the last decade or so, so I may occasionally jump in as well. So we realize we don't represent every viewpoint about weddings, so a little later in the show we'll be inviting our listeners to call in and join us too. Father Tom, let me start with you. In the Catholic tradition, marriage, the wedding, is a sacrament, one of the most sacred things the Church can do. Why is that? Why is it so important?
Well, that's a very good question. We could be here for 3 days.
Only have an hour.
Okay. Well, I think all of us know that marriage has been so determinative in children's lives and in the lives of the spouses, and a good choice or a bad choice or a mediocre choice changes or affects, doesn't it, almost everything. So that alone makes it very important.
Mm-hmm. The service itself, Rabbi White, in the Jewish tradition, sort of plays up the significance of the event, right?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. It's a very sacred event. Many people choose to get married in the synagogue in front of the Holy Ark, where the Torah scrolls are, the trappings of the wedding, where they're married under a canopy, which represents progeny, the stars in the sky. I think all of those symbolize the gravity of what's happening.
I want to turn to Arwind Khetia, who is a member of the Hindu temple and sometimes officiates services. I think a lot of folks have a general concept of a Western wedding, at least the bride and groom and the white gown and the tux and sort of the general way that works. There's obviously variation in different traditions, but Arwind, I think folks probably for the most part don't have a lot of familiarity with the Hindu tradition. Give us a picture. What does it look like when you walk in and you see the beginning of a Hindu wedding service? What would we see?
When you come to any Hindu wedding, you see a lot of fanfare in so many ways. You see the mandap, the post, four post with a canopy. You see the people with excellent dresses, and they're ready to receive the bride and the groom. There is a lot of music, the flowers, and the priest is chanting the verses, for the wedding ceremony. So there are a lot of things going on at that time.
Yeah, it sounds and actually having a canopy, that of course sounds very familiar from Jewish tradition.
Right.
What does the canopy represent? You mentioned progeny, the stars, right. the offspring of the couple.
Mm. So the canopy is also symbolizing the bridal chamber.
Hmm.
Okay. And it's symbolizing also beyond that the home, the bridal home. And in a sense, it's like bringing the home into the congregation, placing the bridal couple underneath and having the country if it's a big wedding, having the congregation surrounding the family in their home.
Interesting.
Welcoming them into the community as a new couple.
So a word that we often hear in connection with marriages is covenant. There's this commitment being made between the two people in the wedding. Father Tom, what is that about, and how is that displayed? How does that acted out in the wedding service itself?
Now that's probably the heart of it. So many folks, I think, might look upon a wedding as something like a contract, and therefore it can be broken or changed or modified. A covenant, on the other hand, for those with a Judeo-Christian background, the covenant that God made with his people, Israel, which is prophetically shown in the life of, say, the Gomer who was these? Well, Gomer was the wife, and Rabbi, who was the husband?
That was Hosea.
Hosea,
it's,
right.
It's like the Bible quiz here.
Exactly. Yeah. See, I'm glad I have these. I couldn't do it on my own.
Glad I reviewed last night.
Yeah. And in that Bible story, it's how God has Hosea taking his wife Gomer back after she runs off with various lovers as a prophetic sign of... the way I understand it, correct me again, Rabbi, is a prophetic sign of how a covenant can never be broken, that God would never break his end of the bargain, nor can we. Now, that's a covenant. It's also in a Christian church, a covenant between Jesus and his people, Jesus and the church. So when we're talking about a covenant, we're talking about a non-breakable action.
Different than a contract.
Oh, my, yes.
Yeah, Rabbi, how is covenant expressed in the wedding in the Jewish tradition?
Well, the covenant is expressed by the exchange of rings. Mm-hmm. In very traditional ceremony, it's one way from the groom to the bride. In more liberal traditions, such as the one that I practice, it's a mutual exchange. You also have the wedding contract, which spells out the covenant and obligations, in particular, again, from the traditional sense, from the husband to the wife. But I also wanted to mention something, an area where the Jewish tradition and the Christian tradition diverge in terms of the durability or the breakability of the covenant. And in fact, in the scriptural readings for this week, we learn about the possibility of severing that covenant in cases where, you know, for whatever reason, things haven't worked out.
Hmm. Arwind, is there an understanding of covenant, of mutual commitment in the Hindu ceremony?
It is, but it's in a different form.
Okay, tell us about that.
Let me tell you that. The marriage is one of the most important of all Hindu rituals. They have found their expression in the Rig Veda and Atharva Veda. With the development of religious consciousness, it was recognized that marriage is not only a social necessity, but became a religious duty. Now, thus, marriage is a step toward spiritual perfection, with a strong emphasis given to social benefits that it brings. The Sanskrit word viva means to sustain, and it requires to understand the dharma. So that the covenant is dharma.
Uh-huh.
And the dharma of the householder for the marriage is given in the Vedas, and that's what we do.
I see. Now, it's interesting. You mentioned that there's something about the entire society is being expressed in this in this ceremony too, right?
Yes.
And I know that that's part of all of these traditions. That there's a reason the wedding isn't conducted in a private back room, that there's something happening in front of the congregation, in front of the group of people, right?
Right. Well, I wanted to mention that in the Jewish wedding, the essence of the wedding, even more than the exchange of rings and the reading of the covenantal contract, is the witnessing by designated witnesses who sign the contract, usually before the ceremony.
Right.
And who are the duly appointed witnesses to, during the ceremony, may or may not be appointed as such to, you know, designate themselves outside of the congregation. But the mere fact that the congregation is there witnessing the event, that's crucial in the establishment of the bond between the couple. So, for example, the idea that you could take your lover to a mountaintop and declare her yours for life and she to you, to the Jewish tradition, unless you got a couple of people hiding behind the tree who witnessed that, you don't have a marriage.
How is the congregation important in a Catholic wedding, Father Tom?
Similar in a way, but you must have a witness. And in the Roman Catholic Church, a priest or a deacon is the official witness of the church, or it could be under special conditions given to someone else, like mm-hmm. a minister of another church denomination. But keep in mind that a sacramental marriage in the Catholic Church is conferred upon a couple, by the couple, to one another. And a marriage takes place, the sacramental marriage, when the couple makes that gift of themselves to the other, you know, to heaven to hold from this day forward, better for worse and such. That is the vow, and that's what constitutes the sacrament of marriage. And a priest is simply a witness. I do not confer the sacrament. Also, the folks that are there, the people, it's a time of them for them also to renew that covenant they have with one another.
And I would echo that from the Protestant tradition as well, that there is an important role for the congregation mm-hmm. as a collective witness and to continue to, in fact, to support the couple in living out those promises. We know that there's many listeners from traditions that are not represented at this table. We want to invite you to join the conversation and tell us a little bit about weddings in your tradition. If you consider yourself one that is in a different tradition and wants to talk about what weddings are like in your background, give us a call at 816-235-2888. If you yourself had a religious wedding or didn't, tell us why or why not. 235-2888. You can also email us at updatedate@kcur.org. Arvin?
In case of Hindu religion, while the family and the congregation is important, but no marriage ceremony could be performed without the blessings of the fire god Agni. Mm. So that is very important. The significance of the fire within the ancient tradition is expressed in the first verse of the Rig Veda. And the fire gives light and warmth to life, and Vedic tradition is said to shine within each person as a force of discrimination and awareness. The presence of fire, the wedding ceremony brings purity to the minds of the bride and groom. So the presence of Agni is very important.
Very interesting. Now, I know that one of the things that most clergy, most who officiate weddings have had to deal with or consider is interfaith weddings and how you incorporate folks of different traditions. Let's take a call, in fact, from Ellen in Kansas City, Missouri. Ellen, good morning.
Good morning. Our son was raised Presbyterian, married a Jewish woman on Long Island, and my brother, who was Presbyterian minister from Texas, assisted in that wedding. So we had both Christian elements as well as the Jewish elements, and we were so impressed having both sets of parents there under the chuppah, under the canopy. And my daughter was singing at her brother's wedding, so basically his whole family was there with him. So when Mary Jean was married, our daughter, later, she wanted her whole family to be close there with her. So she invited me, because I'm also a Presbyterian clergy, to do the part of the service. And her brother and her father and her sister-in-law, as well as her best friend, were her attendants, so that we were all there very close to her. It was a great day.
That's a great story, and a great testimony to the way that different faith traditions can influence one another and bring the best of both. Ellen, thanks so much for calling in.
Thank you.
Rabbi Scott, have you participated in interfaith weddings?
As a clergyman?
Sure.
I'm actually under compulsion by my denomination not to do so,
okay,
upon penalty of expulsion if I were to. And I'm, by the way, ideologically comfortable complying with that because although I'm from a liberal theological position, I'm from a conservative tradition when it comes to the practice of Jewish traditions and Jewish law, hence the name of my denomination, Conservative Judaism.
And this is an area where the different Jewish denominations would differ from one another.
That's correct.
All right. And Father Tom, I know that often you probably have been asked to participate with clergy of other faiths. Is that something you're comfortable with?
Yes. I have been asked, and I have done it with various, even Jewish rabbi. Not conservative, of course.
Of course. And if so, you wouldn't mention his name.
Oh,
here,
no,
right?
Absolutely not. We never. There's got to be some faith among thieves.
Very good. Arwind, is the Hindu wedding compatible with other faiths?
It's not quite in that compatible in that sense. But when we have interfaith marriage, boy from Christian faith or Jewish faith or even Islam faith, then they end up doing two ceremonies, one Hindu ceremony and the other ceremony for the boy or the girl. So that way we try to kind of compromise and, be satisfied with both the parties. But it does happen, yes.
I heard a listener wrote on a Facebook page here earlier today, knowing that this topic was coming up. My father-in-law is Jewish, mother-in-law is Catholic. He objected to a Catholic wedding strenuously. I said, look, it just seems like a bad time to, deny Jesus. We compromised. I told the priest to go heavy on the Old Testament. He said he didn't care as long as there was a pint of vodka waiting for him after the Mass.
So there's always a solution.
Sometimes there's different interfaith solutions that can be worked out. I wonder if we might talk for a moment about sort of different customs that are unique to our particular traditions, mm-hmm, including some that maybe are culturally familiar, but no one knows what they mean. And we had a listener call in already from the Volker neighborhood, Linister. He asked, why do they break the glass in the Jewish ceremony?
Okay, the glass is broken at the end of the ceremony as a way of remembering that the Holy Temple lies in ruins, which is a message to the couple and to the congregation that there, as long as the temple is lying in ruins, that there is no complete joy, that even in the absolute joyous moment, which is a wedding, qualifies for one of those, if not the paragon as such, it's still only 99% while we mourn over the destruction of the temple, which I would say the best interpretation of what that meaning is nowadays is that the temple stood as a symbol and an actual practical representation of the unity of the Jewish people, and that's an object of concern for people like myself where we do have these divisions and we don't always agreeably disagree.
I was at a Jewish wedding not too long ago, uh-huh, where the rabbi explained the breaking of the glass in terms of a sign of good luck, however many pieces the glass broke into, I believe said would be the number of years of special joy in the wedding or something like that. Is that sounds like that's not really part of the theology of the broken glass. It's more a cultural understanding.
I wouldn't say that it's the primary explanation, but I kind of like that as a homiletic.
Feel free to borrow that.
How can I put it? Riff. Yeah.
And I think that might make an interesting point about the ways that symbols and signs and practices that began with sort of a religious significance sort of take on new meanings through the generations and change. Father Tom, what's one unique sort of special characteristic that one might find in a Catholic wedding?
Well, I don't know if there is one right offhand. If the marriage took place within the Eucharist, the celebration of the Eucharist, that, mm-hmm, of course, would make it unique.
And when you serve the Eucharist or the bread and the wine to the do you only serve the couple or does the whole congregation take part in that?
All those who are Catholics mm-hmm. invited to come forward and participate, encouraged to participate.
Yeah.
Asked.
Arwin, what's a practice that that Western listeners may not be terribly familiar with out of a Hindu wedding?
All of it.
All of it. Yeah. Yes.
We have a lot of symbolism in Hindu marriage, and it starts from the receiving the bridegroom, receiving the bride. When they sit on the platform or the mandap, they are asked to take each other's hand, and then that's a hastamalam. That is very unique, and the chant that may we be united in our hearts, in our mind, in our prayer, in our goal, may there be perfect unity. That is one. The other one is the seven steps they take. Seven steps.
Mm-hmm.
So there are...
The couple actually takes seven physical steps.
Physical steps. Right. And there are seven piles of rice, small piles of rice made out. Mm-hmm. And couple walks, one step at a time. And the couple then kind of says that we may have strength and will. And the bride says, in every worthy wish of yours, I shall be your helpmate. In the second one, it says, let us our life be filled with vigor and joy. The third one, increasing of prosperity.
And they're saying all of these in Sanskrit to
in
one
Sanskrit.
Another? Even if they don't speak Sanskrit.
When I do the perform the marriage, I give them the English translation.
I see.
And make them speak.
Very good.
So that they know what they are talking about.
By the way, if I may interrupt for a moment, we do have a little bit of Hebrew in the Jewish ceremony, which is spoken at the very least by the groom. But it's just a few words from the Song of Songs. And quite often, because sometimes he's a little nervous, he'll repeat it after the rabbi. So we have a little bit of Hebrew spoken by the participants, and which reminded me from what Arwin said.
This is that's the I'm my beloved's and he's
I'm my
mine.
Beloved and he's mine exactly or she is mine
or she is right. mine in yeah. this case. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888 is the number to call with your own questions or stories about weddings and religious practices. Jennifer in Lenexa is with us. Good morning, Jennifer. Jennifer, are you there? Sounds like we lost Jennifer. Maybe she'll call us in again.
In the meantime, I might mention that even though there's nothing, I answered a question, unique necessarily, we have the Catholic Church is universal, throughout the world, mm-hmm. and various groups of people, cultures and all have unique stuff, which I get a kick out of. They're just wonderful. They're beautiful. And so whether you're Polish, Italian, Czechoslovakian, whatever, they sometimes come with their native customs, which are most welcome.
Well, and one of the things that has struck me in my role as a minister is that often customs that people think are religious customs, because mm-hmm. that's what they've seen in the weddings they've been to, mm-hmm. are in fact cultural customs.
Right.
There is nothing religious about having five bridesmaids and five groomsmen, flanking the front of the sanctuary.
Right.
There's nothing religious particularly about the father of the bride ushering in the mm-hmm. the woman and quote unquote giving her away as though she were a piece of property. That's a cultural thing that has been handed down that isn't really part of the religious faith underlying mm-hmm. marriage.
Mm-hmm. Right. The Hindu view of life is nowhere better illustrated than in marital rites performed during the marriage ceremony.
Okay, so you're saying that in the wedding, you're getting a little glimpse of the whole of Hindu belief.
The complete nuances of social, cultural, and religious background of Hinduism is seen in that marriage ceremony.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Well, right. let's ask, Jennifer is back with us now, I think, and she might have something to add about that. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. Well, first I wanted to say that I think it's wonderful that you're doing this topic because, we relocated here from where my husband and I both grew up in Ohio, and it is just so, to my experience, everything is very Christian, and so there's so little understanding about different religions in general, and in our case, especially Hinduism. But my husband was born in India, moved to the States when he was one, so he was raised Hindu, and I was raised with Christian traditions, but I don't practice religion. But we actually did two weddings. So we did an American wedding on, like, Friday night, and then on Sunday we did an Indian wedding. The Hindu priest was speaking about, you know, doing two ceremonies and things, we just split it up over time, but that is what we did.
That's great, Jennifer. And so did it feel like it was actually compatible? Did it feel like we were seeing part one and part two, or did it feel like they really went together?
Oh, no, they're completely different. They're completely different. Like I said, I don't really practice religion. So for our American wedding, I actually wrote the ceremony and we had a minister perform it. And then the Indian wedding, I mean, traditionally, they're multiple day events. And, you know, for example, we had the American one be the one that was the one that made it legal so that we would both understand it. And it's just, they are entirely different. I mean, the priest was speaking about the seven circles around the fire and, you know, they are joyous occasions where Christian weddings tend to be more solemn occasions. You know, in Indian weddings, the congregation will break out into song in the middle of it. I mean, they're extremely long in the first place. my husband's aunt stopped the priest at one point because she said he was doing it wrong. And she wanted to correct him. But we actually play, and I don't know if this is, my husband's Gujarati, so I don't know if this is a tradition, but there's a game that you play during the ceremony where, you know, there's a plate with the water and, like, the tikka powder and stuff that makes it kind of murky, and the husband and wife each will fish in it for either jewelry or coin or something, and it's supposed to say who's going to rule the marriage.
That is very, very true. I'm Gujarati, and I know what you're talking about.
So whoever finds the prize or the ring in the cup is the one who will rule the marriage?
Yeah, and I got it 5 out of 5 times.
That is what it is.
And you're the winner, Jennifer? You're the winner?
I won 5 out of 5 times, and after the third time, his relatives were screaming, "Let him win!" And I said, "No way!"
sounds like it was an accurate predictor then. Jennifer, thank you so much for the call. We really appreciate
it. Thank you.
The Religion Roundtable is here at Up to Date, and we are talking with Rabbi Scott White of Congregation Ohev Shalom, Father Tom Wiederholt, Catholic priest, and Arwind Katia, a member of the Hindu Temple and Cultural Center of Kansas City. We're talking about wedding traditions and wedding practices from many faiths, including yours. 816-235-2888 is the number to call if you have a story or a question to share. Arwind Katia, we were talking before the break about some of the distinctive practices in different traditions. I know that fire is used more than it is in my own tradition, for sure. Well, how is fire a part of Hindu weddings?
The fire is supposed to purify the mind, it gives the prosperity, and we invoke the blessings from the fire god in so many ways. So all this, the ceremony begins with the fire, and then, of course, it proceeds into so many other directions. But that is the first thing that happens. They provide a clarified butter into the fire, and every time they do that, they kind of invite the blessings from all the different gods of a Hindu pantheon. Okay. So, but we also have another tradition, another sequence in that, and that is touching of the heart, where the bride touches the heart of the groom, and groom puts the hand on the left shoulder of the bride. And then there is a verse from the Rig Veda, and that says that into my will I take thy heart, thy mind shall dwell in my mind. On my word thou shalt rejoice with all thy heart. May God join thee to me. This is a beautiful sentiment that is expressed from the Rig Veda, which is about 4,000 years old scripture. So when I perform the wedding, I make sure I repeat at least twice or thrice in all the languages I can.
That's lovely language. I think you might get some more visitors looking to have a Hindu wedding if you keep this up.
Well, actually, as a matter of fact, the yoga students and yoga teachers are going for the Hindu weddings, and more than 50 or probably 100 weddings have taken place. The Hollywood is big time on Hindu wedding also.
Very interesting. Yeah. Well, let's take a couple of calls from some folks who have experienced religious weddings in a variety of capacities. Let's start with Linda in Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Good morning.
Linda, I understand you've seen a wedding or two in your day.
I certainly have. I've been a church organist for many, many years, pianist and harpist also. So I've played for countless weddings through the years, many, many weddings, and I've seen a lot. It's a fascinating thing, so I'm enjoying listening to your program today.
Is there a particular wedding that stands out to you?
Oh, rehearsals are another thing. I don't know if we want to talk about rehearsals, but ceremonies. I think the funniest thing that ever happened to me was a little five-year-old boy in a wedding one time I remember. He was the ring bearer, and somebody didn't take him to the men's room just before the ceremony was to start. I think they should have. Because it was embarrassing.
Yes. I think we all have ring bearer and flower girl stories for those of us who have those as part of the service. Linda, thanks for calling in. It's sure nice to have you here on the air.
Certainly. Thanks for the program. God bless.
You bet. I do think that children's involvement in weddings is often a source of conversation afterwards. Some might say it's the only thing that some people remember about the wedding afterward. Mm-hmm. Rabbi White, what's the role of children in a Jewish wedding? Is there one?
Well, we hope that the children arrive after the wedding.
Well, those children, but, yes.
Oh,
yes.
I see what you're asking me now, Brian.
Well, you never know. Actually, in this day and age, right? I mean, we have all sorts of different family arrangements.
But if there's little brothers and little sisters, having them walk down the aisle and sprinkle rose petals, something along those lines is very nice.
Yeah. Is there a role for family children in the wedding?
It's exactly similar to what he said, that when the bride comes, they are lining up on either side of the walkway, so to say, and they put the flowers, so the boys and girls take part in that, yes.
I have a friend who's a Baptist minister who wrote on Facebook that he was part of a wedding where the couple wanted the dog to come in and process and stand with the wedding party. I haven't had that request myself, but I suppose it's a possibility. Might compromise the religious content.
This is like the guy who wanted to marry his horse.
Yes, I guess if you there's different kinds of love, I suppose. Let's talk to Jim in Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning.
You have a wedding story to share?
I do. I have been telling people if you've ever been invited to go to a Greek wedding in Greece, you should go. And I just came back from one. They had two ministers, both Greek Orthodox priests. One spoke Greek, one spoke English. Very heavily accented, hard to hear. But I was curious if somebody could tell me about why they have this concept that looked like two halos on sticks that they intertwined and then put back and forth between the bride and the groom as prayers were being said over them. It was very interesting, but I didn't get an explanation of it, but I thought it looked fabulous.
We don't have any Orthodox priests at the table today.
It's Greek to me.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Rabbi Scott.
But I just thought, as I said, if you ever get invited to an ethnic wedding in the country where it is, go.
So have you seen the movie My Big Fat Greek Wedding, Jim?
I did, and I want you to know something. This one was better.
Better than that. Well, that's saying something. We appreciate it, Jim. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
We had an email from Anna, and this is a different perspective. She says, my significant other and I are not religious. We live together. He needed health insurance. We had a friend get ordained online and marry us legally so that my boyfriend/husband could be added to my policy. We sometimes call each other wife and husband. But most of the time, we don't think about ourselves that way. It's sort of a serious question, as you have met with couples who are seeing less and less need for sort of the religious trappings of marriage. How do you handle that in your own work with them as they prepare to live life together? Father Tom?
Oh, wow. That's good. And it's good because I think, as you mentioned, there's more and more of that apparently happening. As a Catholic priest, I couldn't quite go along with that because that does not involve the covenant, But I can certainly appreciate, why some people do it. Another one is older people, because they cannot understand that they have certain benefits. But if we get married, I'm going to lose these benefits. So the question is, can a priest officiate at that wedding?
Right. Marry them, as I have received the request, to be married in the eyes of God, but not the state.
Yeah. That's another good question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course, it would appear from the law that you can't do that, but then again, I've known that it has occurred. Arwen, your situation is a little different.
Yeah, right. We do not, again, as Tom mentioned, that we do not accept, you know, that arrangement per se from the religious point of view. And it is not as popular as in the Western, you know, societies. So in India and even in here, of course, we see here and there some people trying to experiment with that idea. But no, we do not encourage, or we do not. It's not part of the religious duty. I mean, you're not fulfilling your dharma.
816-235-2888 is the number to call to join our conversation. 235-2888. G1 in Warrensburg is on the line. Good morning, G1.
Good morning. I was married 3 times, civil ceremony, Catholic, and Hindu ceremony, and for the last 43 years.
The Hindu one lasted for 43 years?
No, we have been married all three.
Oh, okay.
For 43 years.
Oh, they were all married to the same person on all three different weddings.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Now I understand.
The reason it is so... We haven't divorced because if we do, we have to do it 3 times.
So, G1, I'm curious.
My question to Mr. Kapia is, what is the significance of dowry in Hindu tradition and in Islamic tradition?
Good question. Tell us, what is the significance of dowry?
Right. Dowry is not part of the Hindu marriage tradition. It's a social... a sort of aberration, and it has continued in some part of the country, but not all of the people do not expect dowry. Like when I got married, that question never arose. In our family, those kind of questions never arise. So it's not all pervading, or it's not part of the, you know, religious requirement, so to say. So no, it's not there at all. And of course, I can't say anything about the Muslim tradition.
Thanks for the call, G1. Appreciate your calling in. I am curious about dowries as a part of a sort of cultural background of marriage, but not ever part – doesn't have religious significance in the Christian tradition, at least.
Nor
the Jewish tradition either. I wanted to ask about preaching or the substance of what is said by the officiant at weddings. I had a comment from a friend on Facebook who's actually a Presbyterian minister. She said that the couple told her they'd recently been to a friend's wedding where the priest went on and on about how the world is such a terrible place that it makes no sense to marry and bring children into this terrible world. And they asked, could you please not do that? She assured them that she wouldn't. But I wonder, what do you tend to preach about at a wedding? What's the subject matter?
Wow. I'll tell you, there's so many variables in there which flex with my, and this is Rabbi Scott speaking, my knowledge of the couple, the prescribed scriptural readings for the week. But I would say if I had to look at think about what overarching themes that I would be talking about, is among them would be the idea that marriage is about establishing a three-way relationship in the sense that the obvious is the two-way between the couple, but the third way is with God and with the Jewish tradition, which stems from the Bible, from the Torah, and from God. Alongside that, the idea of building a Jewish home, and not just in terms of the trapping of the home, that they should have the mezuzah on the doorposts, the little boxes that you might see on the homes of Jewish doors, but that the ethics mm-hmm. of the home should be Jewish ethics, and that has to do with not just with the people who come into the home from the outside, but the way the couple interact with each other in an ethical fashion. And I usually tie that into a theme which I remember even from our own wedding, my wife and I, over 25 years ago, which was that life has vicissitudes, and one of the purposes of a marriage is to support each other when something bad happens, so that, and not necessarily to the one of the two of you, but maybe someone in the household or maybe something in general. Okay, right. if you've gone through a hurricane, okay, and it's affected your home, the purpose of the marriage is for you to help each other, not just taking care of practical things, getting the water to the house, cleaning up, but the actual emotional climate in the household as well.
Sort of putting some meat on the bones of the vows they're making to each
exactly.
other.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Father Tom, what do you tend to preach about? Is it all puppies and flowers and roses, or do you get into some of those vicissitudes as well?
Well, I hate to say this, Brian, but after 50 years of doing marriages, I have torn up all my old homilies. I can't stand to look at them. I'm so embarrassed by what I said. Frankly, what Rabbi Scott said is basically what we are instructed to do, the scriptures. And but going back to this previous caller, just to defend the minister, whoever mm-hmm. he or she was, that talked about the world's going to hell in a basket or something, there's no need to get married because yeah. it's all stupid. You know, that happens to be more prevalent than the thinking happens to be more prevalent than I wish it wasn't. And that is, people do not want to enter into a covenant marriage saying, look, how long is this going to last? You know, the world, I'm not going to enter into a covenant.
So looking at the reality that marriages don't last a lifetime as they used to in many cases, that sort of the sermon is acknowledging the reality of the world in a way.
I think it is. I really do. And I think there's some honesty there.
Hmm.
But it takes, I think, an awful lot of faith or something, maybe naivete, but to enter into a covenant with another human person. You know?
I think that's a really interesting point, Arwin. Does the Hindu service acknowledge the difficult realities of life, or is it all about the ideal that is sought?
We do not speak about these realities during the marriage. It is not part of the ceremony. Okay, what is emphasized is that the stable family is a stable society. Stable society is a stable nation. So the stable family, what is the ideal of the household? And that ideal is described as a house full of joy, obedient children, sweet-speaking and loving wife, good friends, charitable attitude, warm welcome to the guests, nourishing food, love for God, and holy company. These are the goals, and this is the dharma. Dharma has a much deeper and wider meaning, that without that quality of being, you are not what you're supposed to be. That's dharma. Like fire has to have the warmth. The honey has to have the sweetness. So without that, honey cannot be called honey, right? So that is the dharma. For the married couple, dharma is to achieve the ideal household.
It's not a covenant for real unless that ethical ideal is being
absolutely
obtained.
Absolutely. Again, yeah, just why our friend Scott mentioned. It's the ethical emphasis of the moral life, to live as a two people.
Well, speaking of some of the particular contemporary issues that clergy have to deal with concerning marriage, we've got Jason on the line from Kansas City, Missouri. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
Tell us your question for the Religion Roundtable this morning.
Well, I would like the panel to respond to the issue of gay marriage.
Okay. What in particular? You're asking them their particular views or their traditions or?
Well, that and as far as the religion goes, I mean, I'm a gay man myself, and I feel like that I'm an outcast from society because we are not recognized by the community.
So that's a good question. It's certainly one that almost every religious leader has or soon will have to address. In the state of Missouri and the state of Kansas, that there's not a gay marriage law, so it's not a legal marriage that's being sought. It's some sort of religious ceremony recognizing or blessing the marriage. Maybe each of you could just speak briefly from your tradition about your experience of or what you would do. Scott?
I haven't had the occasion to officiate at a gay or lesbian wedding. I can say, however, that in this religious divide among the Jewish people, I'm on the side of the divide, which actually fairly recently, in the last just the last several years, the decision-making body from my denomination, Conservative Judaism, approved of gay marriage, entitled it to gay and lesbian Jews who wanted such a thing from their rabbi in the conservative movement, and even in the past year has created a liturgy for that purpose. But I should say, just to be, you know, full disclosure about and speaking for Judaism at large, that none of that would apply to the Orthodox tradition of Judaism, of which I am not part. You do have kind of the yin and the yang working together in Judaism. I wish they met a little happier in the middle, but right now that's not the case.
Yeah, it's a difficult place to meet. Now, I'll jump in at this point from the Protestant background. All the denominations, almost all of them, are wrestling with this question. The United States, at least, the Protestant denominations are. Some churches, including the United Church of Christ, have gone forward and authorize their ministers, if they choose — that's a congregationally based church — if they choose to perform weddings for people of the same gender. The Presbyterian Church where I serve has not authorized that exactly, although there are some ministers performing them now, and it's a question that's very much up for discussion at the moment. But the Presbyterians, as well as the Episcopalians and some others, have said that ministers may bless unions, may have services celebrating the covenant commitment that the two are making to each other, even if they don't call it — actually, only if they don't call it — a marriage. And so there are some real dynamic conversations happening in Protestant denominations. Father Tom, perhaps not so much in the Roman Catholic Church right now?
Oh, I don't know about that, Brian. I don't know. To start off and make it very clear, in a Roman Catholic Church today, a marriage constitutes a covenant between one man, one woman, for life. Okay. Having said that, what both Scott and you are saying is something that is something we're dealing with. Namely, the society, the culture, the world is more and more accepting of gay people. My classmates and I sit around and talk about what's happened in our lives in the last 50 years, priesthood, and the concept of homosexuality is certainly one that lists among the top. When I was ordained, the first few years, that topic was not even, you know, it was, and as you both said, recently, denominations, churches, the Jewish faith is dealing with that. So obviously, if all the other churches are dealing with it, we're dealing with it. Also, people have come out of the closet, as they say, and we know them and we love them. And family members or people that are very close to us, we find out are gay. You just don't cut off that relationship, not at all. And the church never says anything. They have a document out that they are our children nonetheless or something like that. The bishops, the United States bishops came out, you know. Every gay person is invited to the Catholic Church. No gay person is ever rejected from the church because she or he is gay. You know, absolutely not. The question, though, is like marriage and at the present time, one man, one woman.
Arwin, is this a question that is dealt with in the Hindu temple?
Not quite, because we don't face that problem as predominantly as in the Western society. Number one, in the scriptures are clear about the marriage. They say the man is half, you know, an individual, a man is half the person, and the other half is his wife. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, that is the tradition that we come from. Having said that again, yes, we do not reject the gay people as outcast because Hindu religion recognizes that divinity within each person, with every person's soul is divine. So regardless of their orientation one way or the other, he will still remain a child of God in that sense. So, you know, we don't have anything more.
Very good. One last note. We're almost out of time, but a comment that was shared from Judy in Roland Park by email. She says, "Well, I've been to two weddings where the bride's dog was the ring bearer. I won't forget those two. And we'll have to just use our imagination. One more comment from Facebook. Presbyterian minister writes in with the story of his classmate whose non-religious mother, learning that the Episcopal marriage service included communion with wine, asked if her family could provide the wine as a love gift, which she did, and allegedly she brought a very fine Chardonnay. So we can all be thankful for that. Rabbi Scott White of Temple Ohev Shalom, Father Tom Wiederholt, retired Catholic priest, and Arwind Katie from the Hindu Temple and Cultural Center, thank you all for being here today.
Thank you, Brian. It was good to be here.
Learn more about all our guests and get more information about our show at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Our show's theme music is by Bobby Watson and the UMKC Conservatory of Music Concert Jazz Band. We had help this week from KCUR's Kim Noble, Maria Carter, and Greta Wendelin. Today's show was produced by Danny Alexander. Our senior producer is Steven Steigman. Have a great Labor Day weekend, everyone. I'm Brian Ellison, and you are up to date.